one. So which resort sits on the highest slope today?
It's Granite Peak near Wausau and boasts 400 acres and a 700-foot vertical drop. The fun and history of skiing is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Bars. Welcome back to Fiserv Forum, where it is a 125-108 loss for Milwaukee here in Game 2 in this best-of-seven series, as the Bucks will head to Indianapolis on Thursday, where they'll take on the Pacers on Friday night, and then Sunday in the next two, and all of a sudden the home court advantage shifts over to the Pacers. The Bucks will have to try to find a way to get one on the road here if they want to get this series. Before we do anything else, let's pause 10 seconds for station ID here on the BMO Bucks Radio.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Well, a reminder, this copyrighted broadcast of the National Basketball Association may not be retransmitted, reproduced, rebroadcasted, or otherwise distributed or used in any form without the express written consent of the NBA. As, again, the Bucks fall by a score of 125-108. Our broadcast brought to you, as always, by BMO. They're the official bank of the Bucks. Let's go, Bucks, by Jockey. For nearly 150 years, Jockey's been providing comfort and caring for generations of families, because when you're comfortable, nothing feels better. Shop jockey.com. By Go Right Way, make us part of your next trip for stress-free service to and from the Milwaukee and Chicago airports. By Valley Sports Wisconsin, the heart to the Milwaukee Bucks fan. By Freighter and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. By Uline, the shipping and packaging supply specialist. By Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. By Cousin Subs, we believe in better. By Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. All right, when we come back, the Bucks postgame report is on the other side of this timeout. We'll hear from Doc Rivers and more. That's all after this. This is the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
Suit up for the $800,000 Sports Car Series at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel Milwaukee. April through May, score free play, cash, one of four new Toyota GR86s, or a new Toyota Supra. Play with your club card to earn entries, five times the entries on drawing days, and when the Milwaukee Brewers play at home. Got what it takes, slugger? Only at Pottawatomie. For more details, visit paysbig.com/sportscar. Must be 21 and a club member to play.
We Energies want you to keep this important safety message in mind. Before you start digging, planting, or landscaping on your property, call 811 to have underground utilities marked. Calling 811 at least 3 business days before you plan to dig will help you know what's below and can prevent a hazardous situation. Our representatives will mark the underground utilities on your property for free. So remember, stay safe and call before you dig.
We Energies. People you can trust. Energy you can depend on.
Catch Milwaukee Bucks basketball.
Giannis, bring in the goods!
On Valley Sports.
Dame time! Dame time, Milwaukee!
The clutch shots.
Huge three-point shot! It has electrified this building!
The superstar highlights.
Giannis! Oh, wow!
The can't-miss moments.
Chris Middleton, and one! It's his night!
Watch the Bucks on Valley Sports or stream on the Valley Sports app.
Flynn in the middle of the floor. His game has really stepped up in the second half.
Since he got the BMO Bucks debit MasterCard, he's been carrying this Bucks team. And I mean that literally. He's at the grocery store, but the team's in his wallet.
Here's a tap. And he's bought some asparagus. What a play.
Carry your team with you when you use the BMO Bucks debit MasterCard. Plus, enjoy up to 20% off Bucks merchandise at the Pro Shop at Fiserv Forum. Visit BMO.com/bankcard for more details. Banking products are subject to approval and are provided in the U.S. by BMO Bank and a member FDIC.
125-108, the final score here inside of Fiserv Forum. The Indiana Pacers even up this best-of-seven series with a victory. And another big game from Pascal Siakam, the game's leading scorer tonight, pouring in 37 points as all five of the Pacers' starters scored in double figures, three of them with 20 or more points. Rejoined by Dave Kane, and Dave, that was one of the bigger differences in this game, was that balanced scoring from the Pacers. Their shooting seemed to get contagious. And for the Bucks, really consistently, it was basically Damian Lillard and Brook Lopez
that was your offense, you would have a few spurts where somebody else would start to heat up, but nothing on a consistent level.
Yeah, and you know, I think, yeah, that's part of your problem. Again, I go back again to the defensive side of things. So here tonight, obviously, I mean, they just – Indiana scored at will when they needed to, and I just think the Bucks are going to have to figure out something here to solve some of those easy buckets inside, and then Indiana starts hitting threes. That never helps. But Indiana got a lot of shots at the rim inside. Pascal Siakam was able to capitalize. He had another big game. Look, most points scored for a Pacer in a playoff game since 2014, and that's on the heels of that last game that saw Siakam put up, you know, 36 points. So they have not really had an answer for Pascal Siakam, which is something that they'll have to deal with. But, you know, again, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board and try to figure out a way to make life more difficult and make this Pacers team earn a little more than they had to tonight. They got a lot of easy points, and credit to them. They made some good shots and had good ball movement. But 76 points in two games now for Pascal Siakam is something the Bucks are going to have to be mindful of. It's the most points, second most points scored in back-to-back playoff games in Pacers history. Reggie Miller at 81. In 2000, Tom Hecker just hands that note to me. So that's saying something for what he was able to do in these first two games against the Bucks.
And, you know, to that point, the Bucks actually took more shots at the rim tonight. They took the same amount of shots in the paint, essentially, as the Pacers did. Indiana just hit theirs. The Bucks did not. The Pacers with 16 makes at the rim, the Bucks with 12. And they were 26 of 42. They shot 62% on their shots in the paint. Bucks shot just 45%. So part of that is your quality of shot, too, is that's where Pascal Siakam is at his best. The guy for the Bucks you would point to is Chris Middleton. But as we mentioned, you're never really able to get Chris going and get into his spots there.
And I would also argue Bobby Portis is another guy who they really needed a big lift from here tonight. And he's been so good for this team. And, again, he didn't have a double-double, but – you know, in the nine games that he played without Giannis this year, averaging better than 20 points a game, better than 10 rebounds a game. And tonight, it just wasn't his night from an offensive standpoint, which is pretty rare in this building. 6 of 16 for Bobby Portis shooting the ball. He ended up with 14 points, 11 rebounds. And, you know, not a bad game, but you needed a big game from someone like him, especially with Indiana scoring to the degree that they were here tonight.
Tough one for the Bucks, and again, as we mentioned there, the toughest part about this is the performance you got from Damian Lillard once again. 26 at the half when he had 35 at the half in game one, finishes with 34 tonight.
Well, I would argue in some ways the opposite, because I think seeing Dame show signs of that previous iteration of him that we haven't seen with much regularity here in Milwaukee just yet in terms of the consistency, if he can start to find that, boy, all of a sudden, it's a game changer for this Bucks team. So I am encouraged to see that Damian Lillard is showing signs of that guy that they thought they were getting, because he has looked the part in both of these games so far in this playoffs.
Certainly encouraging, yeah. My point is more you hate to
waste it.
To waste it and see,
yeah,
that coming to
sure.
Defeat on a night where Dame goes 6 of 11 on his three. So now this becomes best of five series, and the Pacers will have the majority of those games at home. Three of those five games, should they be needed, will be in Indiana. So the Pacers did their job, bounced back after that game one loss, and stole home court advantage. Now the Bucks have to do the same and take at least one of those two in Indiana. The first of those is going to be Friday afternoon, a 4:30 Central Time tip-off Friday for game three between the Bucks and the Pacers. Dave, we will catch up with you then.
All right. Yeah. Yes, we will. So we'll hit the road and talk to you from the Hoosier State. Looking forward to seeing the Bucks try to get that bounce back win.
Friday afternoon, Bucks and the Pacers, game three from Indianapolis. Again, 4:30 tip time. 4 o'clock is when our coverage begins for that one. Rounding out the numbers here, the look at the starters. I mentioned the Pacers had a big game from their starters as their bench scored 23 of the 125, 105 points from their starters. Bucks starters chipped in 90, but they only scored 108 points total, did the Bucks here. Pacers led by Pascal Siakam, another big game, 37 points on 16 of 23 shooting, 11 rebounds and 6 assists for Siakam. 22 points from Miles Turner, who started to heat up as this game wore on. 3 of 6 on his threes, 9 of 15 from the field, blocked 3 shots as well, 7 rebounds and 6 assists for Turner. And Andrew Nembhard, 20 points, 4 rebounds and 3 assists on 8 of 11 shooting. 11 points from Aaron Nesmith. 9 of those came from beyond the arc, where he went 3 of 8 on his threes and dished out 7 assists. And Tyrese Halliburton took just 7 shots in game one, took 10 shots tonight. So the offense was more flowing through Siakam, Turner, even Obi Toppin and Andrew Nembhard. They all took more shots than did Tyrese Halliburton, but still recorded a double-double, 12 points, 12 assists, and 4 rebounds. For the Pacers point guard, Obi Toppin led the bench with 9 points and 8 rebounds. 8 points from Ben Shepherd in 23 minutes. And TJ McConnell missed 4 shots. Did score 6 points, though. 2 of 2 at the free throw line, 2 of 6 from the field. 6 points and 4 assists for McConnell. As for the Bucks, again, Damian Lillard with a big first half. Once again, 26 points at the half, 6 3-pointers. And Lillard finishes 6 of 13 from 3 with 34 points. We'll round out the Bucks statistics in just a moment, but let's head downstairs and hear from head coach Doc Rivers.
Hey, Doc. You guys are down 4 with 11-17. Pat, it's the free throw. Just how do you feel like it slipped away so quickly for you guys?
Yeah, I thought, it's funny. Coming in this series, they said we couldn't play defense. We did that in the first game. They said they couldn't play defense. They did that in the second game. I thought it was more our offense versus their defense than the other way. They got out on breaks because of our offense. I thought their pressure took us out of sets. I thought we struggled execution-wise on the offensive end, and I thought that bled over to the defensive end. So I thought it was more our offense tonight. So even in that stretch, came out, ran a play that we liked, and we just didn't execute it. So we got to handle that better.
Last week, we talked a lot about shot discipline, taking the right shots.
Yeah.
Is that what it felt like there?
Yeah, the whole game. Not in that stretch, the whole game. And I thought, but give them credit. Like, I thought their pressure forced us into taking tough shots, getting the ball up at half court. It was almost an 8-second count, probably 15 times a night. And even after you got it up, we couldn't enter the ball to the elbows. We couldn't get the ball to the post. We didn't get in the paint at all in the second half. And the paint is where we have to live, either with the drives or the post-ups. They fronted us. They three-quartered us. They pushed us around. I thought they were the more physical team tonight.
How do you find the balance between trying to get to the rim? You know, some of those missed shots through contact were the ones where all of a sudden they're
yeah,
running.
But,
how do you
but,
find the
but
balance?
But those were not great. I mean, they have to be good shots. You know, if you're twisting and turning, we should move the ball. I can't wait to watch the tape because I just thought there were times we could have moved the ball better. But there were times that their pressure got to us and we have to do a better job there.
Doc, maybe this is along the lines of the pressure. It seemed like they made an effort to, well, you had talked about this earlier in the week about, you know, series can become personal and keeping focus. And it seemed like they tried at times to shake that a little bit, and not just through play, but through some shoves.
But I didn't think it was anything dirty. I just thought they were more physical. You know, the reason we were on the floor is because they put us on the floor. You know, I thought they were on the floor in the first game, and they flipped it on us tonight. So, what should they do? They should do that, right? And it is personal. We're trying to win something that they want. They're trying to win something we want, and the game should be personal. So, you know, it's 1-1. You know, we'd love to go beat 2-0, but it's 1-1. We go to Indiana and go win a game or two.
So since you sort of saw this, though, in the second half of last game, because you mentioned it after watching the film, is that now something to think about or to have the guys think about going into game 3? Like, okay, because you kind of saw it, and then they sort of took it to another level.
Yeah, but you just got to match it, right? What you can't do is react to it. This is not a boxing match. Nothing's going to happen out there, I mean, I don't know how many times we're going to square off at each other and look at each other. You know, both teams. It's comical at times, right? Nothing's going to happen. At least I hope not, because I hope both teams can keep their composure through physical play. It's the playoffs. It should be physical.
That's two games in a row where Dame came out really strong scoring-wise in the first half, and in the second it kind of faded. Is that more a byproduct of trying to get other guys involved or just Indiana's defense?
I think a little bit of both. You know, we didn't get Bobby involved as much as we wanted to. And we tried, but we have to do a better job.
What kind of matchup problems does Pascal Siakam present
today
for you guys?
It's a major one. Even in the first game, I thought the difference today was his three ball, plus I thought he was a playmaker today as well. You know, in game one, he scored, but he didn't really get anyone else involved. I thought tonight he did everything for them.
First half, they shoot 10 of 20 from the three-point line. What'd you feel about your three-point defense? Is that what you, were those the shots that you wanted to give up and they just made them tonight? Or?
Yeah, I thought we blitzed a little bit tonight, and I thought they took advantage of it a couple times. And again, I thought a lot of that was transition again, where shot quality, are like the shots that we take are part of our defense. They really are. And I thought in the second half we lacked that discipline. And I thought for the game, we liked that discipline tonight. We played in random a lot, didn't execute our stuff, which means bad floor balance, and they got out and ran. And that's what they should do, honestly. And that's what, you know, they should do that. So we have to do our jobs.
I believe before you pulled your rotation, guys, I think just 5 minutes for Malik tonight. What was the thought process?
I just thought he struggled tonight. You know, we'll go back to him. I thought A.J. was playing with a great confidence tonight. You know, he's a young kid, and I loved it. We texted back and forth after the game the other night, and I said, man, you miss wide open shots. I said, just think of what's going to happen in game two. They're going to give you more of them, and you're going to make them all. He didn't make them all, but I thought he took them all, and he took them with confidence. And so I thought that was a good sign for us.
I know Chris finished the game, but was there any update on his ankle?
Yeah, I think he just had to retape his ankle. I don't know if he did anything, honestly, Jim, but I don't think so, but I don't even know. Thanks, guys.
Bucks head coach Doc Rivers, a tough one tonight, 125-108. The Indiana Pacers win and even up this best-of-seven series at a game apiece. Things shift back to Indiana, or to Indiana, I should say, Thursday, when the Bucks will leave for Indiana. Friday night is game number three, Friday afternoon, actually. 4:30 local time tip for the Bucks and the Pacers, game three from Indianapolis. We'll get to all the rest of the numbers on the postgame show after this on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
A cancer diagnosis shouldn't have to mean living without joy or optimism. At the Friedert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Network, we're pushing to put cancer in its place. By bringing together teams of leading specialists who are pioneering ways to treat every type of cancer, and by unleashing promising new clinical trials. Let's push ahead until every cancer diagnosis is a story of survivorship. To learn more about breakthrough cancer care, visit Friedert.com/cancer. Heart disease won't stop us. Diabetes, allergies, cancer. Nothing will keep the Friedert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network from pushing Wisconsin ahead. We're constantly raising the bar for medical excellence and providing more ways to receive it, so you have it for all your health needs, big and small. Let's push ahead, and we'll make life here as great as it can be. Visit Friedert.com to find out how.
This is Bucks OT.
Takes it into the paint, attacks the rack, sends it down with a grown man dunk. Oh, the Greek Freak, he's eaten now.
A final look at the game and a preview of the next matchup on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
125-108, the final score here. It's the Indiana Pacers evening up this best of seven series where they win over the Bucks. Behind a big performance from Pascal Siakam, 37 points on 16 of 23 shooting. You heard Doc Rivers say the big difference between game one and game two, Siakam was hitting threes and getting his teammates involved. More of a playmaker. That was not the case in game one, where the Pacers' offensive success was almost solely coming from Siakam. Not the case tonight, as they had five players in double figures, all five of their starters, and three of those starters scored 20 or more points, led by Siakam in his 37 points on 70% shooting from the field and 75% on his threes. Bucks were led by Damian Lillard, who is now up to 69 points in his first two games as a Buck in the playoffs. 35 in game one. All of those came in the first half. 34 tonight. 26 came in the first half. Brook Lopez, a career high, 6 3-pointers. Playoff career high, 6 3-pointers. 6 of 7 from the outside and 8 of 13 from the field was Lopez, scoring 22 points. Next in line was Chris Middleton, 15 points, 6 assists, and 5 rebounds. 14 points from Bobby Portis, who does record a double-double. However, this is the first time the Bucks have lost a playoff game where Bobby records a double-double. 14 points and 11 rebounds. Only 2 attempted threes, did not make either of those in just 6 of 16 from the field. The fifth starter was Pat Beverly, who had 5 points, 2 blocked shots, 3 assists, 4 rebounds, and a steal. But that Bucks bench, just 18 points from the second unit. 2 points from Jay Crowder in 15 minutes. Pat Connaughton gave the team a spark. 5 points, 7 rebounds. 3 of those came on one sequence where the Bucks had a chance to make it a 1-point game. Pat Connaughton cuts to the lane, gets a shot to fall, makes it a 5-point game, hits the free throw to make it a 4-point game. It was a flagrant as well, so the Bucks maintained possession but could not score, and from there went from possibly making it a 2-point game or a 1-point game, just a 1-possession game, to the Pacers ballooning that lead to 12 within the blink of an eye. 5 points as well from A.J. Green, 4 points from Malik Beasley, who played just 10 minutes tonight, as Doc Rivers said. Didn't think he had a great game, but they will go back to Malik Beasley in this series. And the final 2 points from that second unit coming from Andre Jackson Jr., making his postseason debut. 2 points, 2 assists, and a rebound. But this one goes to the Indiana Pacers. So on to Indianapolis we go for games 3 and 4. That will be Friday afternoon and Sunday evening. And we do now know there will be a game 5 in Milwaukee 1 week from tonight. Game 5 at Fiserv Forum between the Bucks and the Pacers. Hopefully it's a closeout situation for the Bucks. Still TBD on the status for Giannis. We'll take a look at the NBA scoreboard, round out the rest of the numbers, and begin to wrap things up after this on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwing created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? Created more than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
MJ.
125-108, final score here inside of Fiserv Forum. It's the Indiana Pacers evening up this best of seven series behind 37 points from Pascal Siakam, 44% shooting from three for the Pacers, and 56% field goal shooting in this one. Some of the team numbers of note: Pacers outscore the Bucks in the paint 52-36. Pacers did more with the turnovers as well. They forced 8 Bucks turnovers, scored 11 points off of those. Bucks forced 6 Pacers turnovers and turned those into 7 points. Offensive rebounds relatively even, same with points scored on the second chance variety. 8 offensive boards for the Bucks, that turned into 13 second chance points. Pacers with 10 off of their 7 offensive rebounds. The fast break points, the other area of note, it's Pacers team plays at a much faster pace than the Bucks. Bucks did a much better job of dictating that pace in game number one, as we heard from Doc Rivers. The shot profile had something to do with that. Your offense is attached to your defense, especially when you're playing a team that likes to get up and down the floor at the rate the Pacers do. That was a big advantage for Indiana tonight, 14-5. Fast break point difference. Bucks did not win the game tonight. They did, however, win the opening tip, and in doing so, they have scored another $500 for Milwaukee Habitat for Humanity, donated by Sargento. Sargento, the official cheese of the Milwaukee Bucks. It is time for our play of the game, brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Our play of the game, no surprise tonight, comes to us off the hands of Damian Lillard.
Lillard goes behind his back. He uncorks a three and drills it. Damian Lillard is looking automatic again.
6th three-pointer that came in the first half for Damian Lillard. 3 times in Bucks franchise history, a player has hit 6 or more threes in a half in the playoffs. Damian Lillard now holds 2 of those 3 instances, with those coming in the last 3 days. Damian Lillard tonight, Damian Lillard on Sunday in Game 1, and the only other instance was Ray Allen, who knocked down 6 first-half threes in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Philadelphia 76ers back in 2001. That 3-pointer by Damian Lillard, our play of the game, brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Find your win at the Midwest Premier Gaming Entertainment and hotel destination. All of that and more waits for you at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. 24 assists tonight for the Bucks. They were led in that category by Chris Middleton. 6 of those 24, including our assist of the game, brought to you by Freightert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. 125-108. Pacers knock off the Bucks to even up this best of 7 series at a game apiece. We will take a look at the NBA scoreboard, one final score, one game that is going on as we speak, and we'll preview your NBA playoff slate for the next couple of days and game 3 in our series, which will be Friday afternoon. We'll do all that after this on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
When you think about early labor unions, do you think of Wisconsin? You should. The state's first labor union formed in Milwaukee in 1847 when the bricklayers organized. Then the carpenters union in 1848. The National Labor Union didn't even form until 1866. A State Historical Society report shows Wisconsin's union members also pushed for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance legislation, becoming a model for other states. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original Badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like Badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking Badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Battleground, purple, swing state. You've heard the terms, but what connects it to elections? Wisconsin has been a swing state off and on since the 1950s, but recent elections solidified it when the state could have been won by either the Democratic or Republican candidate. Michigan and Minnesota, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, also swing states. Watch for more campaigns to target Wisconsin and these other states before the next election. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Snow accumulations will be light at first.
When you need to know what to expect from the weather,
widespread throughout the southern half of the state, we're looking at 5 to 8 inches.
You can count on the Civic Media team of meteorologists led by Brittany Merlot to track the snow and the impact.
This will be a heavy, wet, slushy, sloppy snowfall that'll be heavy to shovel.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Ticket info and more.
Wrapping things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network, I'm Justin Garcia. As the Bucks come up short tonight, falling to the Indiana Pacers 125-108. So this best of seven series now tied at a game apiece, shifting to Indianapolis for Game 3 on Friday. This was one of three games on your NBA playoff schedule. One of those games, besides ours, has gone final. That took place in Minneapolis, where the Minnesota Timberwolves have raced out to a 2-0 series advantage over the Phoenix Suns with a 105-93 victory behind 25 points from Jaden McDaniels. So the series now moves to Phoenix for game number three. And that game in Phoenix for the Suns and the Timberwolves will be played on Friday evening. The other game that's on the schedule this evening is in action as we speak. It's at halftime in Los Angeles between the Mavericks and the Clippers. Clippers lead that series 1-0, 45-41, the halftime score. The Mavs up by 4 on the Clippers. Luka Doncic is already up to 18 points at the half. Kawhi Leonard, by the way, is back and playing in this game. Clippers are led by James Harden, who is already up to 12 points at the half. Taking a look at your schedule for the next 2 days here. Starting tomorrow, just two games on your NBA Wednesday night playoff slate in Boston. Game two in that first-round series between the Celtics and the Heat. And in Oklahoma City, it is game two between the Thunder and the Pelicans. Celtics lead that series 1-0. Thunder lead their series 1-0. Thursday night, we have a trio of game threes. The first in Orlando, 6 o'clock Central Time tip for game three between the Cavaliers and the Magic. Cleveland leads that series 2-0. 6:30 tip in Philadelphia, where the 76ers host the New York Knicks. That series also 2-0 in favor of the Knicks. And tipping off at 9 in Los Angeles, the Lakers host the Nuggets. The Nuggets lead that series 2-0. Our next game broadcast is going to be Friday afternoon. Make note of the tip time. It is a 4:30 Central Time tip in Indianapolis for Game 3 between the Bucks and the Pacers. 4 o'clock Central Time is when our pregame coverage begins on these airwaves. And for those of you listening in Milwaukee, a reminder, our extended postgame show gets started as soon as we wrap things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network. We invite you to stick around and join us for Bucks Talk. You can find that show on our flagship station, 620 WTMJ. We will take your interaction, your calls, your texts, your thoughts on tonight's performance, the series as a whole, and what the Bucks need to make adjustments on as this series shifts to Indianapolis for Game 3 Friday afternoon. So your chance to weigh in on all of those on Bucks Talk, which gets started as soon as we wrap up things here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network. And again, you can find that on our flagship station in Milwaukee, 620 WTMJ. For the rest of you, Friday afternoon is when we reconvene for more playoff Bucks basketball. 4:30 Central Time tip in Indianapolis for Game 3 between the Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. with pregame coverage beginning at 4 o'clock. For Dave Kane calling the action here tonight, our statistician, Tom Hecker, our engineer, Ryan Elliott, and our team back at the BMO Bucks Radio Network Studios, our engineer, Jason Gordon, and our producers, Evan Witalison and Max Meyerson. I'm Justin Garcia, signing off, reminding you we will talk once again Friday afternoon with more Bucks playoff basketball right back here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated.
This is the same debate we hear about TikTok today, where it's a Chinese-owned company that has access to all of this data. And while it makes claims about, like, well, it's actually on an Oracle server in Texas or whatever, the truth of the matter is that there have been cases, well-documented cases, where even TikTok itself has accessed the data of some critics, media critics of it. As a Chinese company, it has to answer to the Chinese government, if the Chinese government were ever to make such a request. And then just the final point to tee up this conversation is the other reason why we should be concerned about this is I am sure you've seen some of those videos about how to hack into a vehicle remotely, these connected vehicles, whether it's an internal combustion engine or or EV. Because everything is wireless and everybody has, you know, it's a smart car, so it's sending data back to the home base. And I'm only laughing about this because one of the things that my lovely wife refuses to do, and I'm okay with this, is get any smart appliance in our kitchen. She's like, I don't want anybody knowing what we're cooking or what's in our refrigerator or anything like that, or when we're home, when we're not home. So look, this is a legitimate set of concerns. And I'm glad that Senator Brown is raising this, not only through kind of the jobs, the economic prism, but also through the perils of connectivity and access to data. And particularly if it's available to an authoritarian regime that has an axe to grind with a number of Americans.
Maybe not even just an axe, just a competitive advantage. I mean, the reality is, you know, we're two very different cultures, two very different political systems, ideologies, however you want to frame that. And, you know, I was sitting thinking about this today before we talked, and I can't think throughout the history of humanity where you've had the two largest economies on the planet, the two largest militaries on the planet, the two largest exporters on the planet, is intertwined and as dependent as we are. And look, you know, I think China's dependent on us as well as we are. And I think we saw that during the pandemic, just how, you know, how desperate and dependent we are on them. That's not a good place to be. At least I don't think so.
No, first of all, it is not a good place to be. Second, I completely agree with you. It is rare, if not unique, that you have powers that can shape the outcome for the world, who are the two largest economies in the world, who have such a deep, although one-sided, trade relationship. And I think that is that's unique. And also that we're in an era where there's such sophistication of products that there's a ton of parts. That didn't used to be the case either, right? And so there's more to, you know, there's a bigger playing field, so to speak. And at first, you know, the theorists thought that this would be a good thing, that because of this interconnectedness, that the two countries would come closer together politically, the Chinese would be exposed to democratic norms and want to embrace that, and the government would respond to the will of the people. Well, that didn't happen, and now the Chinese government can weaponize its supply chains, and the U.S. depended on them. And here's just one one little aspect of this. If you're looking at the lithium ion battery supply chain right now, and these are going to be both the power storage and the power generation devices of the future, right? And I mean, they're here now, but they're going to be even more ubiquitous. In so many of the categories, whether it's processing or some of the materials that go into it, like lithium or graphite, or any of that, it is, you know, in some cases, 90% of the world's capability is in China. So it's not just us, it's everybody else too. And that kind of concentration is very difficult. But it is not to say, and I guess here's the thing, that, you know, our companies are, you know, especially the large global multinational companies, you know, they want to keep things generally open with China, but they are certainly capable of finding alternate sources if they need to. Okay. And so it's not like they're helpless children. These are well-resourced companies that can figure out alternatives to China if there is more pressure to do that. And I honestly think that there should be, because I do think that that kind of dependence is not a good place for the United States of America to be from an economic or a national security point of view.
Now, you mentioned something a moment ago that got me thinking, you know, because I go back to the era where they were selling us on this idea that, you know, the Chinese are going to be like us. And I remember going, no, I don't think the communist government's going to allow that. They don't have the same freedoms, the same culture. It's not going to happen. And I remember arguing, you know, 20, 25 years ago that our arrogance is going to get us into trouble. Arrogance with a healthy helping of greed. I think that's why we're here. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah. I do think that is so true, that there was this such confidence in this idea that exposure and economic openness would beget more civil liberties and openness in China, in other areas. And the Communist Party has made sure that that hasn't happened.
Right. But here's the thing. I agree with it on paper, Scott. I agree with it on paper. On paper, everything's perfect. Every when I coached football, every play I drew up scored a 100-yard touchdown. But on paper, this is one thing. In practice, the Chinese Communist government was never going to allow free markets. They were never going to allow people to have access to the things that we have here. In fact, they don't even allow their citizens to see the TikTok that they the video crack that they feed our children.
Yeah, or any of our social media apps, by the way. So not just including TikTok, but like Facebook and others too. Because, right, they don't want that. And there's a great firewall and you can't get any information that Westerners get about the world. Basically, it's all spoon fed by the Chinese government. But I do want to make a distinction here, because I really do think that it's important to keep up cultural and educational exchanges, and that there should be trade. It should be reciprocal, and it shouldn't ever put the United States in a bind. And so the idea of completely shutting us off from China, I'm not in favor of
that. No, of course not.
And there might be some people who are. I'm definitely not in favor of that. But, you know, we also have to be realistic about what, you know, about what the economic relationship is and what the limitations are, and the need to find alternate sources, preferably here at home, but if not with our allies and others, so that we can unwind some of the vulnerability that we had. Because the connected car example is a perfect fit, because there are some people who want to make sure that Americans have access to Chinese EVs, whether they're built in Mexico or China, elsewhere in Asia, or even in someday in the United States, maybe. And it's just a very bad idea because of that subservient relationship that those companies have to play to the government, the authoritarian government in China. And we know that information and data has been weaponized in the past. So this isn't just like an academic exercise. Like, we know this is a credible threat.
Yeah. Now, look, I'm not an isolationist, and I've said this 1,000 times. I'm a protectionist. When I leave my house, I lock the door. I'm not an isolationist. I didn't build a giant moat around my house to keep everybody away. You can come knock on the door and I can let you in, but you don't get to just walk in. And sadly, what we've allowed is we've allowed the Chinese communist government to just walk in, and not just walk in, but kind of take over. You look at a lot of the farmland that's being bought up, a lot of the companies that we've not lost. We know where they are. They're there. So, you know, we've been really dumb in some ways. And again, I go back to arrogance and greed getting us into this mess. So the question then becomes, you know, how do you decouple this? I mean, you know, President Biden is talking about tariffs. You got Trump who was talking about, I think, you know, I forget, triple the amount of tariffs or whatever it is. Is that the way forward? How do you see this decoupling, if you will, happening? Or just is it about holding China accountable to what we've already agreed to?
Yeah. Well, it's a really good question. And if there was an easy, you know, one size fits all answer, we would have done it by now. The fact is that it takes some level of sophistication and it takes a multi-pronged approach. And certainly tariffs are one aspect of an approach that can disincentivize imports coming from China and scatter them elsewhere, hopefully to the United States, but if not, like our allies or our free trade partners as well. But at the same time, Rick, it's not like that investment is going to happen by itself in the United States just because of tariffs on Chinese products. Right. And that is what I think is it makes the Biden industrial strategy more credible, is that we're actually going to invest in those areas where we know this is going to, you know, these are going to be the economic battlefields of the future, and we want to be making this stuff. And in many cases, we are way behind, you know, way behind, whether it's solar or EVs or what have you, batteries, and we have to play catch up. And the other thing that we need to do is to enlist our allies so that they understand what we're doing and that they ought to be joining us rather than trying to play us and China off of each other. And so I think that's important as well. And finally, our citizens need to understand what's at stake. You know, there's a lot of people who utilize TikTok who probably don't give a second thought to what's happening to their data or the vulnerabilities, or just like, you know, if they were utilizers of Grindr or sitting in a car or anything that has connectivity. You have, you scroll through the terms and conditions and you click I agree because they were like 50 or 60 pages and you have no idea kind of what your exposure is. And so that's really important for people to understand how, and to take more personal responsibility for their own consumption and their own data privacy as well. That's got to be a part of this, part of the solution.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because it was one of the things that I wanted to talk about. I think the Biden industrial plan, while in its infancy, is a step in the right direction in reshoring manufacturing, because how I think you combat this, and you're right, there's no simple silver bullet solution, but you do it from a position of strength and the ability to produce your way out of this, not out of dependence where we've been. So this idea of doing things out of strength, having a commitment to doing that, and then I would argue, as you put, you know, a call to action of we the people going, hey, you know, I don't want to, you know, everyone walking in lockstep, but some concern of the jobs that are there, you know, might be yours, might be your neighbors. I don't know. We need to be thinking about this stuff again, because I look at, if Chinese EVs come flood this market, the auto industry is done, and with it, lots of manufacturing, and then sadly, your national security base has just gone away.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And we have a long way to go on that road. It is so easy right now to just, you know, if you have a smartphone, to open the App Store and to download TikTok or Shein or Temu, these Chinese companies, and to buy from them or to share and not give a second thought of what the consequences are either for you or for our economy. And so that's why we need these policy solutions, but also to kind of socialize this idea that we have to take more responsibility for this, and we all have the tools to do that.
Yeah, last question I've got for you. Now, we've been talking about this for a while. You and I have been talking for, 15, 18 years now about this stuff. You know, think of just how fast the transformation of our economy, the transformation of the globe happened because of bad policy. When was PNTR, Permanent Normal Trade Relation, PNTR? When was that? It was like 1999, right?
Yeah, it was passed in 2000, and China joined the WTO in 2001.
We're less than 25 years into this, and look at how much has been done. We got a lot of work ahead of us. But Scott, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing some thoughts. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on.
Anytime. Our good friend Scott Paul. Check out the work that they do over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. We will get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts. You concerned about the EVs in your driveway collecting data, or is that too conspiratorial? Is it something you would hear on the right? Sadly, I would agree with. It worries me. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1956. That was the day of the founding of the Canadian Labor Congress. Today, the Canadian Labor Congress is the largest labor organization in Canada, representing some 3.3 million workers. During the early 1950s, labor leaders in Canada were becoming increasingly uneasy about the rising influence of big business in the country. They knew that labor must stand united as a force representing the interests of workers for safe job sites and fair wages. In 1953, the country's two major labor organizations decided to form a unity committee. The Trades and Labor Congress of Canada had been focused on craft unionism, much like the AFL in the United States. The Canadian Congress of Labor emphasized industrial organizing, similar to that of the CIO in the U.S. The goal of the unity committee was to promote cooperation between these two Canadian labor groups and explore a possible merger. In 1955, labor leaders from the United States also recognized the importance of union solidarity to stand as a counterweight to the rise of big business in the U.S. The AFL and CIO merged. The next year, the Canadian merger was also complete. In Canada, the early Canadian Labor Congress had strong representation among manufacturing, transportation, and mining workers. Later, they organized more public sector workers, such as postal workers, nurses, police, and firefighters. By the late 1990s, the Canadian Labor Congress represented 2.5 million workers from 51 different unions. Each year on April 28th, the Canadian Labor Congress holds a National Day of Mourning. The day is set aside to remember all of the Canadian workers killed on the job. In the 1950s, labor solidarity was on the march on both sides of the Canadian border.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I've been getting a lot of email and traffic from people, you know, complaining about TikTok. And, you know, one of the things I think is really important to think about in this relationship that we have with China, with the Chinese Communist government, is it's really been one-sided for a very long time. The fact that you, as an American company, cannot own anything. You have to have a Chinese partner. And look at, if you're the Chinese, smart, did all of the right things, used all of our arrogance and all of our greed against us. You know, made the promise of, you're going to get access. Sure, you're going to be able to sell to our, you know, billion plus people. You're going to make lots of money here. Only to have American companies go in there and see a massive technology shift. And, you know, just the other day, I was talking with my son about, you know, this massive transformation. It wasn't all corporate interest. Walmart played a huge part of this. And, you know, I remember I had, you know, former Senator Byron Dorgan on the program, who wrote a book, I guess it's going back about 10 years, 15 years ago, where he said, look, you know, look at the Huffy bike. You know, Huffy bike used to be made in the U.S. It was a good, sturdy, solid bike that virtually every kid in the country had at some point. And because of Walmart and because of the pressures to lower the prices, we need to get that price down so we can have higher profits. They were basically forced to go to China. And there was a push, not just, you know, with only Walmart, but retailers in general, the Chamber of Commerce, you know, helped make a pipeline. It was a massive a massive move. And very quickly, look, 25 years in the grand scheme of things, not very long. When you think about just how fast we lost our manufacturing base, just how fast communities were devastated, and with nothing to help shore them up. And this is where my frustration is. You look at all these bad trade deals, they all had trade adjustment assistance in them because they knew, well, we're going to lose jobs, but rich people are going to get richer. And you go, but Rick, you know, this was a bad system. Yeah, for you and me. And it's like all of this stuff that working people have been sold my entire life. You know, if we just give rich people all the money, it'll you know, someday trickle down to us. And what we found is, no, their insatiable appetite for more, their greed knows no bounds. And we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization. Just as, you know, these trade deals, these were supposed to be about making, oh, this is going to make consumers' lives so much better. For about that long, what it was really about is making corporations an enormous amount of profit. And it did that. Problem is, the Chinese weren't willing to be everywhere else in allowing U.S. companies to come in and produce portions of a product. They wanted it all, and they wanted the technology, because they eventually wanted to do what they have done, which is retro-engineer or just steal the technology outright and make their own stuff with their own names, their own workers, their own profit margins. This is where I keep coming back to our arrogance and our greed, something quite remarkable. And I find it interesting that people now are, you know, well, I got TikTok and TikTok. How can we ban TikTok? We should be. And it should have never been allowed. That's the weird thing. You know, when you have bilateral agreements, they're supposed to be leveling. We don't get to have the same access. So again, I come back to what I said earlier about, you know, everything on paper works perfectly because, well, you can predict what the other, you think you can predict what the other side is going to do. And on paper, everything works according to logic and according to the laws of economics and the rules of nature and, you know, good, decent American values, only to find that they don't share any of those. And it really is about what it's about, which is being the global dominant player in every arena. Because understand, they are the largest manufacturer in the world right now. We gave that up. We didn't lose it. We gave it up. Because the stuff that they're manufacturing, stuff that we created. They are now trying to catch up with military spending. They are now I don't know, they haven't reached the top of the economic scale yet, but we're struggling. And when you look at the fact that, you know, we do have massive trade with each other, the number I saw in 2022 was, you know, trade between the two countries exporting $750 billion. And the sad reality of, we were the loser on most of it. Massive trade deficits. And you go, well, how can that be? Well, it can be because we don't make as much as we used to. And we need to start. And this is where I give Biden credit. Biden has had a vision on how we're going to reshore manufacturing, how we're going to be competitive. And as I said a moment ago, it's going to take strength, which means you need to invest in infrastructure. You need to invest in manufacturing. It takes commitment. You need a long-term strategy, a plan, kind of like the Chinese do in their 100-year plans. We need to be committed to this. And we also need to have a nation of citizens going, yeah, we probably should. If for no other reason, national security, maybe we should be a producer nation. Maybe we should make stuff again. You think? And this, again, is where I come back to this moment of I'm not an isolationist. I am a protectionist. There is a massive difference. And I'll wear that protectionist label because everyone agrees. I don't know anybody who leaves their door, their front door, their house wide open for anyone to walk in and take whatever they want. Everyone closes the door and most people lock it. Now, I don't know any people who have moats around their house, but I'll tell you, if it meant losing your stuff, you might. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Freespeech.org for the video. Thanks so much for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory. And always streaming.